Hi everyone, good evening, and back to Mad World after our Christmas break, and we have Max Egan on tonight, who is a very, very fascinating man, and I have been listening to all his videos since, I think, 2008, and I think a lot of the people out there on Tirnasaur will know who he is, so he won't take much introduction. Max, hello.
Hello, welcome. Thank you for having me on. I was going to say welcome to the show, but it's early morning for me, isn't it? And you actually had it right the first time. It's Max Egan. It's spelt Egan, but it's pronounced Egan.
Okay, brilliant. Because we'd say Egan in Ireland here, but the Americans say Egan, so I didn't know how it was in Australia. So.
Well, the Americans just do terrible things to the language, though, don't they?
Yeah, I suppose. But...
God love them, but they do.
Yeah. Well... You know, sometimes I'm really prepared about what way I'm going to ask and what direction I'm going to take a show. But with you, you know, it's just so all encompassing. I just thought, just don't even think about it. Just get talking. So, I listened a lot to your sort of YouTube did put up, and there was one a while back which was actually very, very touching when you'd actually been in Gaza, hadn't you? You'd gone under through the tunnels and things. But since then, what have you been kind of working on, and what have you been doing, and what's your next project?
Well, that was actually over a year ago that I went to Gaza, which was a very, very profound experience in my life. It really, really was. You know, it was something that a place I'd always wanted to go and look at, and it was amazing to actually go there and meet the people. But since then, I mean, I've been back in Australia. I've actually been back to Peru last month, and the month before I spent 4 weeks in Peru, 5 weeks in Peru, filming for a new documentary. There's an awful lot of destruction going on in Peru at the moment in the Amazon, and it's very important that people pay attention to it. A lot of people have said to me, why are you focusing on Peru? Because most of the Amazon basin is in Brazil. And the thing is that the catchment area, the top of the Amazon, is in Peru. And to take out the Amazon, if you want to destroy the Amazon, all you've really got to do is destroy its source. And that's what's going on in Peru. There's massive amounts of clear felling going on, a lot of it quite illegal, done through bribery. They're tearing down the forests and planting crops like papaya, which will grow anywhere. A lot of what they're planting there is palm oil. A lot of what they're tearing down the forest for is to make charcoal to sell to people for their wood stoves. So they're basically turning the Amazon jungle into charcoal. And this is not acceptable. So I went there to check that out, and I want to make a documentary film about that. And I've been working on this project that I wanted to launch last year, which I've kind of half launched now. It's in its infancy. I've only launched it so that I can open it up for contributions, because I'm trying to raise a fund whereby we the people can buy large sections of endangered Amazon forest and place it in a trust for future generations, a trust that can never be touched, a private trust that nobody can get near this stuff. We need to save the Amazon. We need to. This is the lungs of the earth. And the unfortunate thing in Peru, as with a lot of third world countries, is that they are at the state now that we're at, maybe back in the 60s or 70s, that's about the state of the culture. That's about the state of the pop culture and the, you know, the local technology and all that sort of stuff. And that was when we were in a throwaway society. We were in a throwaway mentality. And that's the mentality they're in at the moment. Due to our training, of course. We've had all this stuff that we've taken there and dumped on them, so because we didn't use it anymore. So even if you go there, you'll find that the pop culture is Transformers and things like this, stuff that we were into 30 years ago, all the stuff that we didn't sell. They took it there and they marketed it there. And now they're bringing them up about 30 years behind us. And so the place is absolutely being trashed. And they don't have the knowledge that we have of what that type of mentality and attitude and activity actually does, the damage it does. They don't realize that throwing plastic everywhere actually pollutes the environment. They think the stuff's going to break down because everything they've always used just breaks down. They've always thrown rubbish around. You eat off palm leaves, you throw them on the ground, they decompose. You eat off a plastic plate, throw it on the ground, it doesn't. And they don't understand that. So it's really important that the West go and people that care actually go and educate these people on what's going on and take steps to preserve the forest, because if we don't, we're going to lose it, and it's going to be our fault that we lose it.
Well, that's pretty serious. But I forgot at the beginning of the show, we have somebody else with us here as well who's a big fan of yours, and I should have introduced him, but I'll let him introduce himself. So, because he actually was going to try and talk to you a little bit about the particular subject you're talking about now. So, hi.
Hi, guys. How's it going, Max? Nice to be on talking to you.
Hi, Paul. Nice to be on the show with you, brother.
Cheers.
Yeah, well,
big fan.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it is very, very damaging what's going on over there. And you're interested in the Amazon area, are you, Paul?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. And in particular, ayahuasca and the infinite amount of benefits that can come from traveling there and experiencing ayahuasca. And you're having gone to Terra Vida to take ayahuasca influenced my going there. So
there was a synchronicity. Yeah. Okay, you went to the same retreat, did you?
I did actually, yeah. And my decision to go there was actually influenced by I was listening to your own radio broadcast, and you'd spoken about it. So I figured, oh well, if Max Egan went, then it must be legit, you know. So yeah. I figured I decided to go there because of your decision to go there, and it was a very beautiful experience, and they're very beautiful people there. And
oh, they are, yeah. Yeah, they're wonderful people, and it's really important what they're doing there as well. I mean, a lot of people think gringos are going there and they're just making money off the native culture. The problem is that the native culture is being destroyed. Unfortunately, one of the effects of Christianism and the Catholicization, if you will, of the population in South America, which has been going on for a very long time, and it's been going on since the Spanish arrived hundreds of years ago, but what happens is that they get the Shipibo, the Shipibo natives, and they convert them into Catholics, and they become very, very staunch about it. They become very, very extreme about it and very fanatical about it. And they're going out into the jungle, and they're actually killing the shaman. They're going out and they're finding native villages, and they're going and killing the witch doctor because they think the witch doctor is connected to the devil. Because the witch doctor still, you know, the shaman, it's not a witch doctor, it's a shaman. And he's still connected to the plant spirits. He still knows the old ways and he knows where the medicines are. And they're going out and actually killing these people. The shaman killings that are going on in South America are absolutely horrific. And if the Westerners weren't going there and setting up these retreats, the culture would be lost. And it's very, very important that we preserve this culture, that we preserve this knowledge that can be gained through ayahuasca, and that we preserve the knowledge of the plants. And another thing that's really happening there with the destruction of the Amazon is that people are losing their medicines, that the native people can't go into the forests and get their medicines anymore. So they've got to go into town and buy chemicals from Big Pharma. So you can see where all this is going as well. And that's how they do it. So the church goes in there, they send missionaries in to go and save the people. The missionaries go in there, they convert the natives to Catholic, and then the natives themselves go out and kill all of their own people. And they do it because of the Redeemer complex. I think it's okay to go and kill these people because I'm doing it in the name of God, and it's okay if I killed you anyway because Jesus died for my sins. This is the mentality. This is how it all works. So the Catholics go out, the missionaries go out, they infiltrate these native cultures and they pave the way and they lay the platform for the corporations to come in and completely rape the country and enslave everybody to an economic system and steal all the resources. That is the sole purpose of the church, really, the way it infects the world the way it does. And that's what's happening in South America to a horrendous degree.
Well, I'll jump in for a second because they say, I remember watching a thing of, was it Seeds of Destruction? Was it, what's his name, Engel, or I've forgotten the name of the author of that guy. But I think it was he who was saying the same thing, but a bit more about Big Pharma, and it was like every time a shaman died, he said it was like the Library of Alexandria burning down, you know, with the knowledge of the plants and the healing properties that goes with each shaman, you know, it's...
Oh, it is. It's absolutely shocking. It's absolutely shocking. That's why they're paying the shaman as well. People say, oh, yeah, they're doing it for money. Well, no, they're paying the shaman a good wage. They'll give a shaman like $100 to come and do a ceremony. And $100, this is a week's wage. This is 2 weeks' wages, you know, in some places. And they'll do that for one night of singing. So the young kids who are addicted to this stuff we call money, or they're enslaved to it, not addicted to it, but enslaved to it. Everybody needs to pay to be alive now that this economic model's been introduced and superimposed over their lives. So they're going out and they're raping the forest, they're tearing down the timber, they're doing whatever they can to make money. So, but now they can see that, hang on, if I learn the knowledge of the plants and I learn the old ways, I can make $100 a night just by singing. And then they go and do ceremony themselves because they want to learn the old ways. And once they do ceremony, it reconnects them to the earth and they see the folly of what they were doing anyway. So they end up coming back to the old ways. They end up really wanting to learn the culture. So in that way, we can use money as energy for the right purpose. You know what I mean? And so that's why it's good to pay the shaman, because it's bringing people back into the fold, you know?
That's good to know that at least a bit of that is happening, because, you know, this whole kind of, I don't know how to explain it, but a sort of a mixture of, you know, well, obviously the three main sort of, you know, the money, the church, the spiritual, the enslavement of people's minds, you know, coming at from every angle. And it's, and as well as the poisoning of the earth and the poisoning of our minds and it's all kind of the one plan, really, you know, from the same.
It is. I mean, they do this because, I mean, they're wiping out the shamanistic culture because they don't want us to have that knowledge. That's the main reason that they're doing it. It's all part of the same plan.
Yeah. And, it's interesting what you're saying about the, Amazon River, you know, what they're doing to the water, because, you know, I feel, and I think I got this from you first, from listening to something you said way, way back with the Deep Water Horizon, fiasco, you know, which has now stopped the Gulf Stream. But apart from that, you know, that the oil of the planet is almost like her blood, and the water is the deep emotion. And when you, I mean, look, with Fukushima and what's happened with the BP oil spill and everything, you know, once our oceans are gone, that's affecting the emotional level of the human race. And never mind that it's catastrophic for our survival, but, you know, it's poisoning the emotions, and people, whether they know it or not, are in tune with all this. Well, hopefully they are, you know, if they haven't been too over-conditioned. And then now the plants and the trees and the air that we breathe because of the trees going, it's, you know, it's almost like they really are trying to wipe us all out, I don't know, for some robotic race or whatever.
They're changing us into transhumans, but they're removing from us the knowledge of the past. They're removing from us, if you can look at it as a biological computer system, really, you could view the water of the planet. I mean, water has memory. This is proven. Water has memory. You can look at it through water clusters. Just studies of water clusters have shown the water remembers everything that happens to it, always. And it forms, you know, an infinite amount of clusters to encode these memories. So everything that you are, everything you experience, everything, every emotion you have, every energetic state you go through, is all encoded in the water of your body. Your body is 85% water. When you die, that water returns to the groundwater, and it replenishes the cache of the computer system. So you can think of the water as the memory cache of the computer system, the physical memory cache. There's also another cache, an energetic memory cache, because whenever you have a thought or an emotion, it leaves your head as an electromagnetic frequency, and it changes the field around you. And that thought, that frequency, still exists. It always exists out there in the field. It's like a radio wave. Now, you could go out there and you could pick up the very first radio signal that was sent, which was actually Hitler talking at the Olympic Games in Berlin. That was the very, very first radio broadcast the world ever went out over the world, was Adolf Hitler talking at the Berlin Games.
Interesting. It was at that. Anyway, I'll stop.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, but that radio broadcast, that frequency that went out that day, still exists. It's still out there traveling through the universe. Somewhere in the universe could get a little crystal set and they could tune in and they could pick that up one day. Remember the film Contact that came out years ago? And the aliens, the first thing they got was that radio broadcast. And there was the whole controversy. The first thing the aliens broadcast to us was the voice of Adolf Hitler. Okay, because that was the very first radio broadcast that went out. That's why they used that. So all this stuff's still there. It's still in the cache. And there seems to be a concerted effort being undertaken by the powers that believe they be to destroy the cage, to destroy the water of this planet with Fukushima, deep oil, horizon, Gulf spill, all the oil spills, all the stuff they do, cutting a hole through the barrier reef here, fracking, destroying the groundwater in every country. What's all of this about, you know? And the oil is the blood of the earth. It's the blood of the earth, and it's used to lubricate the earth and to hold the tectonic system together. You can't take the oil out and refill it with water the way we're doing. Water doesn't have the same viscosity as oil. You can't lubricate the tectonic plates with water, you know? So we're doing a terrible, terrible amount of damage to this planet. And that's, but there seems to be a huge, huge effort to destroy the water in not just the groundwater, the fresh water, but also the salt water from what they're doing to the oceans. It's incredible the effort they seem to go to destroy this stuff. And so you've got to ask why. I think it's to destroy the memory cache so the people who do get connected, people who, do these shamanistic ceremonies and start switching themselves back on, because really we're only operating to 3% of our capability. There's 97% of us yet to go. And they're making sure that if that comes back online, it has no access to the memory. It has no access to the true knowledge of the planet, because that's where it exists. It exists in the ether. It exists in the water. It exists in the field around you. And this is what you see when you do ceremony very often. You can actually enter that spirit realm, and you will have spirits of the past literally come up and talk to you. And these are 3D people. They look like people. They come up, they'll sit on the edge of your bed, they'll lie down at the edge of the bed, they'll come up and they'll stand next to you, and they will communicate with you telepathically. And you can access all this. And it isn't a hallucination. That's the thing. Ayahuasca isn't a drug. It's a medicine that connects you to the spirit world, and it can heal you both physically and emotionally and mentally. There's been people cure themselves of drug addiction, alcoholism, heroin addiction, all sorts of stuff. So people really need to pay attention to what's going on here.
Absolutely. I've experienced actually overcoming alcoholism myself because of ayahuasca. And I spent a large portion of my life not figuring I'd ever be able to get over it. But ayahuasca miraculously managed to cure me of that somehow. What it was for me is I actually did the worst of my drinking post-ayahuasca. And it was quite similar to a story I heard Graham Hancock tell about how his relationship with marijuana had become destructive in his life. And he described how he got a clear message to not smoke marijuana anymore, but as soon as he got home, the first thing he did was fill up his vaporizer bag and inhaled. And as soon as he inhaled, he was overcome with this feeling of intense dread, you know. And I had quite a similar experience with alcohol. And the first thing I did when I left and got home was I started drinking again, and it just went completely wrong. Just turned into a psychotic arsehole, really. And that was kind of ayahuasca's, I think, for me, her kind of tough love kind of lesson at the end of it all to give me a real kick up the arse. Because it's not a very, it's a very nurturing and healing experience, at least it was for me, but at the same time, she doesn't soft soak you. You know, she tells you the way it is, whether you like it or not, and to deal with it. And
Oh yeah. Tough love, all right, man. She'll slap you around. She'll slap you right around the room. And, but then she'll say, but now that I've slapped your hand, hey, it's okay. I love you.
Exactly.
Now that you know it, it's all good. It's just up to you. Don't backslide. Cause if you do, I'm going to come and kick your ass again.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
But ultimately, hey, if you want to go kill yourself, that's your business. But if you're going to do that, don't come back and talk to me, because you're here to talk to me. If you're here to talk to me, then listen to what I'm saying. She's like that. She's amazing. Absolutely amazing. And I say she because it's a female spirit. It's a female spirit that everybody meets. The spirit of this planet is a female spirit. And she can actually take you and connect you to the Earth Mother herself. And this may sound like weird voodoo to people, but it's not. This is the truth. This is what all of these ancient cultures had and knew. And this is why the Crown Corporation, when it was created by the Vatican back in 1302 or somewhere around there, this is why the first thing they did was go out and decimate every shamanistic culture they could find. They created the East India Trading Company, from whence came the pirates, which were all funded by the Crown. These weren't rogue people going out there stealing ships and getting a crew from somewhere, you know. These were all financed, heavily financed by the Crown, and their purpose was to go out, find native cultures and wipe them out. And that's what they did. And there's a reason for that. Because this knowledge is what reconnects us. This knowledge is who we are. This is who the human race is. This is what we are. We're not this corporate entity that we believe we are from our birth certificate that has to follow all of these rigid rules that are all man-made and contrived. This isn't who we are. We're living in a matrix, a paper-based fictional reality, and it's based on an economic model that is being used to destroy this planet and all life on it and turn it into something that it isn't, a machine-type culture. And people who want transhumanism and want all these enhancements and want all this new intelligence and all this stuff, they only want that because they don't know what they already have, because they've never experienced it, because they're only operating at 3% of their capability because of all the rubbish that they're fed by this system. And it's important that people wake up to this. We've got to preserve this culture. And that's what Full Circle Project's all about that I want to launch this year. It's all about people getting back on board, trying to create some sort of a platform that people can use in their own community and just start doing the right thing. Base everything you do on a moral perspective and push the envelope with your councils and your governments so that they do come and stop you what you're doing, and you can approach the issue from a moral perspective. Because if our governments are enacting legislation which is morally reprehensible, then we have a duty to all life itself, to take that legislation on and to hold these people who enacted the legislation and get them to show cause why they shouldn't be held for human rights violations and abuse of power. That's the way we have to approach it. We can't do it from their legal system. We've got to do it from a moral perspective, and it's got to be done by every single community on this planet. We just got to find people in these communities that are willing to act and got the courage to act and have got the decency and the integrity to act. That's what we need, and that's what the project's about.
Okay, so you are explaining a little bit more about the project, not what it's about, but you know how you're going to launch it, and is there a
well,
video?
I want to create the new film. I want to create a film and explain what's going on in the Amazon, and I just want to alert people to the need for them to pay attention and start trying to implement some type of a re-education plan all the way around the planet. Workshops. Got to start off with workshops. I believe that every problem that we face, put it this way, every single problem that we face, doesn't matter whether it's Fukushima, doesn't matter whether it's the loss of the Amazon, doesn't matter what it is, it's all because of commerce. It's all because of the economic model, and it's all due to legislation that's put in place by governments. The whole lot of it, every single problem we face can be traced to that source. So why is it that way? Well, it's that way because the people are disempowered, because we believe governments are our rulers. We've forgotten that they're just public trustees. So everything that we are facing can be solved by a united community. People who respect each other, people who are re-educated in how to think properly, what the world is, and how to talk to their public servants. You know what I mean? That's what I want to focus on. I mean, I don't know how to or completely go about it. I mean, it's a big task. Re-educating the world is a huge task. You know, but you've got to highlight what this modernization has done, and promote the sharing of information and empowerment to the community at large through workshops, through re-education programs, and by pushing the envelope with your governments. And it's got to be done. It absolutely has to be done. We can't just sit back and allow the world to be destroyed around us because our elected representatives, our employees, are writing stuff on pieces of paper that they believe gives them the power to destroy the planet, and we can't do anything about it. Poor us, there's only 7 billion of us. What could we possibly do? I mean, we've got to wake up and pay attention. We've got to reorient ourselves, re-educate ourselves, change our perspective on who and what we are, because the people that are doing all this stuff on the planet, they're just people, just the same as everybody else. They don't have any power over you. They don't have any power over me. They only have power over this whole corporate system that we believe we belong to, but we're not. You know, all the free man stuff where they go through the birth certificate and all this sort of stuff. This stuff people really need to know. People think they are their names. They think their birth certificate is them, but they're not. So that's I'm actually doing a bunch of workshops around Australia next month. There's an organization called Truthology, and they've got Ben Stewart and myself and a bunch of people. We're going doing 2-day seminars called a Freedom Summit. We're doing these in Sydney, Melbourne and Brisbane over late February and early March. Try to re-educate people on these things and get them up to speed on what's going on. So that should be interesting as well.
That sounds good. And it's interesting that the birth certificate thing is kind of coming up so much everywhere now. It's actually quite good because, you know, before it was just a few little kind of free man videos on YouTube would go, oh, you know, meet your straw man and blah, 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 and talk a bit about the birth cert. And then you'd see the odd post, and then one or two people started talking about it a bit more, but it's sort of gone more mainstream now. Like people like Karen Hudis and all this, you know, from the, on the, on the sort of financial whistleblower side, was actually is going crazy about it all now and talking about the what she found from inside the World Bank, and the legalities and the within that whole system that when she came out and we had her on the show here a good while back, and once again we you know we asked her about the whole birth cert thing, and she came out very strongly about actually finding proof of everything that you're saying about the birth cert that, you know, we've been kind of seeing in videos, but she actually could pinpoint it and legally show how and how it started and where, you know, what it's about and how you're floated on the stock market, not just say so, but, you know, give examples and all this kind of stuff. So if it's kind of going, I know Karen Hudis isn't that mainstream, but she's pretty mainstream, you know, as whistleblowers on that level go. So that's, it's, and more I'm seeing things, little just posts on Facebook from people that normally wouldn't be listening to any of this kind of stuff, suddenly going, oh, did you know that birth cert is, you know, this, this, this. So that's kind of good to hear that you're, you know, still working on that side of things, because the birth cert is a very, very important thing, the whole story of it. And
well, it is. It's just that people think they are their birth certificate. People think they are that name, you know.
It actually, legally, I'm not very good on the whole legal side. That's Kevin, our producer's being there. But what's this thing, do you know about it, where when you're registered with the birth cert, and yes, it's floated as a commodity, and, you know, the so many hours of work that you in a predicted lifetime would be worth, and that would be your net worth that's floated. But that under Admiralty law, that... It works that if you haven't copped onto this by the age you're 7, which is no way anyone will, because no one knows about this really, it's just coming out now, that you're, if you don't write in and claim some of your estate back, or in some way, you're considered lost at sea. So the government can, is now your property and everything is somehow goes back to them, never mind your worth or something.
Yeah, well, let's see. I mean, yeah, people, this is another rabbit hole. There's a higher harmonic to all of this stuff. I mean, a lot of people that see people that are sending back their birth certificates and they're filling in forms and sending this off to the Vatican and they're reclaiming this and reclaiming that and da da da. They're still locked in a paper-based world. If you've got to sign anything or fill out any form to claim your freedom, how free do you think you are? If there was an agreement made that you had to send something back by the time you were 7, show me your contract on that agreement. Show me your signature on that agreement. Show me that agreement and show me your signature on that agreement. Show me on your birth certificate where you had anything to do with the creation of that document. If you look at your birth certificate, it's got government stamps all over it. It's an agreement signed between your parents, made between your parents and the government to create that entity. What the hell has it got to do with you? People say to me, what is your name? And I say, my name? Okay, you're asking me for my name. My. I'm speaking English. I'm not speaking legalese. I'm speaking English. My name. That is my. That implies ownership. Well, personally, I don't believe I can own anything. Not my body, even, because it's just on loan. I certainly can't own land. I certainly can't own property. I certainly can't own objects. I guarantee that this chair that I'm sitting on, or this desk that I'm sitting at, will exist when I'm gone. So I don't own it, you know. If I won't go out and leave my house because I'm scared people will steal my property while I'm away, well, then the property owns me. I don't own the property. You know what I mean? That's my attitude. I don't believe in ownership. I don't think you can own anything because you're only here for a little while. You're just here for an experience, and you're inhabiting a vessel for that experience. You're asking me for my name. My name is Man. And I can say that to you after careful thought, with absolute truth, without frivolity or vexation, based on the evidence of, based on peer-reviewed evidence that comes from the Anthropological Society. If you have a debate with my name being Man, you need to take it up with an anthropologist. If you want to know what my calling is Max Egan. But if you wanted that name, you shouldn't have asked me for my name. You should have asked me for the name the government has for me. Or the name the government created for me based on the agreement made between them and my parents. I have a copy of my birth certificate in my pocket. If you look at it, you'll see government stamps all over it. Obviously, they own the name. I do not own the name. If you've asked me to claim that name as my own, you're asking me to commit fraud. And therefore, I've put myself into your jurisdiction. If I say that is my name, I've committed fraud. And if you're telling me that you're going to, if you're threatening me with violence or threatening me with arrest if I don't claim that name, then I would suggest that what this is entrapment. That's my attitude to a policeman asking me my name. If he asks me my date of birth, I'll say, well, apparently it's the 30th of October 1957. I only have that information based on the testimony of two known liars, my parents. These people told me that they told me the Easter Bunny was real. They told me Santa Claus was real. They told me the Tooth Fairy was real. They're liars. So I can give you hearsay based on the testimony of two known liars because I have no first-hand knowledge of the event. Again, if you're asking me to give you a definite on my date of birth, I'm sorry, but I have no first-hand knowledge of the event. You're again asking me to commit fraud. You see what I mean? You're not your name. You're not your name. You are man. You are a frequency of consciousness inhabiting a vessel. The rest of it is corporate. It's all bullshit. Okay? And if you've got to fill out any forms or you've got to claim this or claim that or do anything that they tell you you've got to do, you've got to run around any little ring at all to establish your freedom, then how free do you think you are? Why don't you know who you are to begin with? Okay, hold your hand up. If you're claiming you have a right of ownership over this vessel that I inhabit, I'm holding my hand up here and I'm opening my fist. Can you do that? Yeah. Because if you can't open and close this hand on this vessel, then you don't own it. I do. And if you're claiming you have a right of ownership over it, I need proof of claim. Show me proof of claim granted to you by my creator that gave you permission to own this vessel that I inhabit. And if you can't, I'm accusing you of being part of a slavery system. I require you to show me proof of claim that you're not. Because I can prove that you are simply by the fact that you've dragged me to this courtroom. Where do they go from there? What is their defense against that argument?
Well, in this country, they probably would illegally call you in contempt of court and take you off to some cell for a while.
I have no contempt for this court, but it would appear the court has contempt for the will of God. You know, is this court not based on the law of God? Do you not want me to swear on the Bible? If the court is claiming it's a higher authority than God, I need proof of claim. Hey, I'm a law-abiding citizen. I'm here to do the right thing. But you people are not providing me with proof of claim. You're claiming a right of ownership over this vessel. I need to see proof of claim. Under your legal system, I need to see proof of claim before I can continue. You know, if you can't, then I'm accusing you of being part of a slavery system. I accuse the Crown of being part of a slavery system. I'm making an open accusation here in front of this court, in front of my friends, in front of all the people I've brought here. Show me that I'm wrong. You show me that I'm wrong and I will hand myself over to the court with absolute no problem whatever. Put me in irons and take me away. But show me that I'm wrong. Show me the proof of claim. Deliver me the proof of claim that I'm asking for because you have to do it under your own legal system. You know, I don't even honor your legal system, but if you're going to use it against me, well, fine. Show me that you have the authority to do so. You know, this is the way you've got to approach it. The problem is that we get angry with these people. You know, don't get angry. Just be polite. Say, look, I'm speaking English, and you're asking me to commit fraud. You're asking me to entrap myself. You're telling me that I have to claim a name, which I can prove to you by my simple birth certificate, by looking at it, that it is not my name. It is the government's name. It's my calling. My name is man, and if you have a debate with that, take it up with an anthropologist. This is the way. This is when I say to people, stand in the power of your flesh. I say it so often on this show. Now, I haven't used it in court because they don't take me to court. I say this to police officers on the side of the road. They just walk away from me. You know, I've had eight police officers surrounding me, but I've had a crowd of people there as well, listening. And the police don't dare take you away. If you try this on the side of the road with a cop in the car, he'll probably tase you and say you're insane, take you away, lock you up in a nut house. But if you do it in a public situation, they've got nowhere to go. And I think they've got a big red ring around me because I haven't been pulled over by a police officer or gone to court in so many years. I mean, I've got unpaid speeding fines. I've got so much stuff. I have no warrants out on me. I do not get harassed by police. They have a breathalyzer on the side of the road. They wave me past. I don't know. Maybe it's the energetic state I'm in. Maybe I just don't call it in. Maybe they've got a red ring around me saying, don't pull this guy over. I don't know. But I just haven't had a run-in with a police officer for a long time, except last year. Last year I went into town in Byron specifically with the intention of having a run-in with a police officer.
Right.
Just because I wanted to exercise a few of my rights, you know, I wanted to show the people what was going on. I actually, you know, you've heard of Rick Simpson, I imagine?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I was actually making some medicine for someone, Rick Simpson method. I'd been making it all day, and so I knew that I absolutely stank of the stuff. And so I went into town, and it was schoolies night. It was Friday night. It was the night the school all got out, and the town was full of, like, 80 extra police. And it was sniffer dogs and police on horseback and everything. So I went into town, stinking of hash oil. Knew that I would be. And I went into the local hotel, and I was talking with some friends, and four sniffer dogs just made a beeline straight for me, and the police dragged me out. I was quite indignant about it, so I've got nothing on me. There's no reason for you to be doing this. Your dogs are mistaken. And I went out, and I went through this whole procedure that I've just gone through with you in front of the whole pub, in front of eight police officers. They were trying to get me on something, and I just kept speaking in this manner. And I had virtually the whole hotel out there listening to me, which is exactly why I went into town, just because I knew they'd come for me because I stank of oil, even though I didn't have anything on me. And so I would create this situation whereby I'd be able to educate the hotel. So I did that in Christmas 2012. That was fun. That was the last run-in I had with the cops. And that was the first one I've had with them for probably 10 years.
Well, I know that Kev here, he was arrested for sitting on a piece of grass, not smoking any. Well, I don't know if he might have been smoking some at the same time, but the arrest was, I can't remember what it was, but he wasn't smoking any. Sorry, he was sitting on some grass in a park, and he wasn't supposed to be sitting on this piece of grass. And he, I don't know, it's on YouTube, but he had a very interesting day in court. And he then, because Kevin set up Tyrannosaur, you know, he was very interested in the whole Freeman thing. He kind of brought it to Ireland, and he's a very young guy, but he's actually, Kevin's actually gone back and studied law to get that side of it, Max, which will intrigue you. And he actually graduated, but he refused to take an oath to the bar. So that's why I was just asking if Kev wanted to jump in here when you were coming in on legalities, but he's sitting back, taking a back seat, just listening. But this stuff fascinates him, and he's, you know, I just think Kev should maybe have a 5-minute.
but you see what I mean, though. There's a higher harmonic. I mean, all the Freeman stuff has been great. It's been great because it's exposed the fiction. That's the best part about it, that it's exposed the fiction, because ultimately it's all fiction. If you're using any piece of paper for anything, you're still in the fiction, because your flesh, everything. Now, God created man and gave man dominion over the earth. Anything below that is a creation of man and is fiction. You know, if you're claiming you have a right of ownership over this vessel, and you are claiming that I have to accept that name as mine when it's got government stamps all over it, then you're claiming a right of ownership over this vessel, and you're asking me to commit fraud. Prove me wrong. Where do I go from here? How can I go forward from this point until you've cleared up this for me? Clear up you know what I mean? How can I even offer you a plea? How can I even even honor this court until you can clear up this issue for me? Because this is what I'm seeing. And I'm not being frivolous or vexationist. I'm just saying, hey, clarify this for me. Because as far as I'm concerned, I'm living flesh.
Yeah.
You know, what is this? Who are you people? Why do you believe you can do this to me? What is this? You know, I mean, they have no defense against this because you've stepped above the fiction. You know what I'm saying?
But also for me, what's interesting is you just said that, you know, between God and the earth is man was given dominion. But if you're into the Bible,
that's their legal system.
But the whole thing is that the Bible is, you know, comes from Greek, which comes from Aramaic.
In the
version where the word in the Genesis, where it says the word dominion actually translates not as dominion as in rulership, but as in guardianship, which is very different.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, it's all fiction anyway. I mean, I don't even use the Bible because, hey, that's what they base their legal system on. Okay. This one you want to use? That's a card, I'll play it. It also says in your book there that you base your legal system on, that man had dominion over the earth. It also says that God's law is the only law, and that man-made law is an abomination. So where do I go from there? You know? If you're going to use this book to base your legal system on, you really want to look at what's in the book. And you can't use part of the book. If you're going to use the book, you're using the book. Well, this line exists in this book, so I'm going to bring that line to your attention. That says that your law is an abomination, especially if it interferes with God's law. And I can sum up God's law in three words, eight letters, do no harm. So I'm not asking you to, I'm not asking people to break the law in anything I say on my radio shows or anything. I'm simply asking the government to stop breaking the law by inflicting legislation upon the people which causes harm. So who's breaking the law here? Me or you? You know, you breaking the law by exercising a right of ownership over this vessel and bringing me in here because of legislation which is causing harm? Who's breaking the law? I mean, this is the attitude people have to have. You can't take a backward step to these people. They're just people. They're bringing you into a fictional world. They take you into these places. They've got these uniforms on that have got all these sigils and black magic symbols all over them, which disempower you, and you can feel it. If you think that magic doesn't work, just imagine how you feel when you're in the company of a police officer wearing a uniform or you're in a courtroom. That feeling that you get, that is because of the geometric structure of the room, and it's because of the sigils that you're subject to. It's an energetic system. That's the way they use it. That's why they wear uniforms. That's why they do all this stuff, because of the way it affects you. You know, but you can step above all of that. If you're aware of it, you can step above all of it, and you can say, I am divine consciousness inhabiting a vessel, and that's what all of these people are too. I'm sui generis. I'm not even subject to the laws of my peers. How can I be subject to the laws of my peers? Can you identify me by my DNA and by my fingerprints? Great. Then by your testimony, I'm unique. Therefore, I have no peers. Therefore, I am not subject to the laws of my peers. I'm not part of the general population, so I'm not subject to the general legal system. I am sui generis. But because I am sui generis and I recognize that uniqueness of myself, I also recognize it in you. Hey, I don't hate you for bringing me in here. I don't have vexation towards you. I don't want to hurt you. I don't want revenge from you. You're just misguided because you think this system's real. I'm just pointing out to you that it's not. I'm pointing out to you that I am sui generis. I am utterly unique under God. I am a unique expression of creation inhabiting the vessel given to me for the experience, the same as you. If you want to debate that fact, hey, give me proof of claim and we can go ahead. Show me how you can move my hand. Show me how you have a right of ownership over this vessel, or show me that you're not part of a slavery system and we can proceed. But if you can't clear that up for me, then I'm walking out of here, because I don't have any contract with you people, I don't have any allegiance with you people, and you have no right of ownership over me. It's that simple, you know? But hey, I don't hate you for it. It's all good. I love you. You're just misguided. I'm just trying to help wake you up. That's the attitude. That's the attitude you need to have. Don't hate these people. They don't know. Most police officers don't even have an IQ over 104. There's new screening systems where they keep people that really just above double-digit IQs. These people aren't real bright. They're just smart enough to follow orders and not question authority. And that's the people that they want. So you can't hate them. You can't. Everybody that we're fighting against here is a product of this system. Sure, there are 3% of the population that are born psychopaths. A lot of them are up the top levels. And their mentality infects everybody below them and causes people to behave in sociopathic manners so they can survive within the system. But we've got to get rid of this hate. We've got to get rid of this need for revenge. You know, I want to change the world, but I don't want to put anybody in jail. I want everybody to come home. You know, I want to bring the whole world with me when I change it. You know, and that's the attitude that we've got to have. People just have to remember who and what they are. And I've said this, I've been saying this to people for 6 years on the show. Stand in the power of your flesh. I guess a lot of people don't understand what I mean when I say that. Hopefully I've explained that to people with a little bit of clarity today. But you've got to know who you are. You're not this paper-based reality. It's fiction. It's all fiction, you know.
Yeah, very much so. This is brilliant. It's very refreshing to hear you going over it, you know, the way you are with us. So is there anything you want to move towards, obviously staying on the same line of things, but anything you want to bring up now, or will we ask you, can I bring you onto another section of this whole matrix, or?
You can take me wherever you'd like to go, Antonio. It's your show.
I'm not even sure where I want to go myself now.
I'm happy to be on. I'll babble for ages on any topic. You get me going, my blood gets up. I get a little bit passionate, and I'll just go. You'll have to put your hand up.
Listen here. I'm actually listening to you, and I'm getting sort of goosebumps. You know what I mean? It's kind of it's the energy that you give, which is beautiful energy, and makes your kind of hair stand on end. And I'm sitting there going, yes, I'm feeling. I'm sitting in my flesh. I'm sitting in my power. Just listening to you. You know, it's great. Which shows that exchange of energies that are so real, you know. So
well, they are. You know, it's the higher harmonic. And hey, look, we're all still finding our way through this. This whole free man thing and this whole birth certificate. This has been a big learning curve for everybody. And we go down this little path. Gosh, shit! I've got the answer. I got it. Oh, wait on. There's more. But often people find these bits and they go, I've got it. And then they get tunnel vision. They go down there and they're stuck in that tunnel. They won't step above the fiction because it's all fiction. You know what I mean? Everything below man is a creation of man and is fiction. You know, the only thing you need to know in their legal system are two words, sui generis. Okay. Sui generis, which means I am unique. If you're claiming I'm not, show me proof of claim. You know,
right.
Proof of claim is an amazing thing. It really is. Ask for proof of claim with everything that they say. And never forget who and what you are. Never, ever claim your name. Explain it to you the way I did. Hey, it's my calling. Sure, you can call me by that, but don't say, I can't say it's my name because you're asking me to commit fraud. And if you're forcing me to do that, I would suggest to you that what you're offering me is entrapment. Isn't that illegal under your system? Because I've explained to you why it's not mine. I've shown you my birth certificate. There's no signature of me on there. You're asking me to commit fraud. And you're threatening me. You're threatening me with violence if I don't commit fraud. This is entrapment. Pure and simple.
While we're on all of this and the energetics and, you know, we know a lot, especially through Kevin, who is very impassioned in the actual, you know, the whole energetics of the legal system. And yes, you know, the sort of the magic spells that go on within the court and, you know, the big man, the black robe who summons you like a spirit, you know, would it summon a magician summoning a spirit? But you know, there's different sides to the whole kind of beast, as I like to see it. You know, the side where they're poisoning our waters, they're poisoning our memories, they're, you know, fluoridating us, they're chemtrailing us from the sky. And yes, it's to bring in this transhumanist agenda, obviously, you know, and have this kind of robotic whatever. And, you know, humanity can go in two ways. It can be those that want to stay with that and those that look for either, you know, eternal life or which is very different than, you know, sort of prolonged life in a third D box mechanic or whatever. But the side of the energy in money, because at the moment, you know, big talk going around, you know, obviously in the last, especially the last few weeks, never mind months, is this whole, you know, global reset. Is it good? Is it bad? There was the One People's Public Trust. There's all this stuff coming out from every direction. Is it, you know, oh, it's all going to happen. Oh, it's the cabal just coming in with a whole new, it's their one world system attending to, you know, set people free with all these, you know, this golden chine. You know what I'm talking about. So what is your view on the power of actual the monetary system? And even if we change it to a better one, or not a better one, but if there is a global reset or whatever, and it's just the same old coming in with a new system, making the slaves think they're free, but under just a better system, but still a slave system. But how do you see the entrapment and the power that money itself holds over us?
It's an incredibly difficult program to break, money. You know, you have tribal cultures and native traditions, they can't understand the concept of money. You have no idea why we would think this stuff is valuable, why we would pass it around to each other. Money, with money comes the concept of ownership. And it's a program. And once it's been superimposed over people's minds, it's incredibly difficult to break. That's what you've put there is the million dollar question, you know, which is interesting. We'd even call it that, isn't it? It's the huge question. This is, I think the only way to break people out of that program is through things like ceremony. To reconnect people back into a gift culture, because our natural state is a state of abundance. Money is the only thing that prevents us from being in that state of abundance. We could transition ourselves, I believe, into a situation where we didn't need money by giving everybody an abundance of money. Because once, you know, if everybody was a billionaire, money would lose value, wouldn't it? That's one way to do it. But it's going to be a slow transition. We have to get the interest off money. We have to get, at the moment we've got money that's based in debt. And people, they're so confused about where money comes from. We actually created ourselves. People think that it's all created by the fractional reserve system. The banks just print money out of thin air, all this sort of stuff. No, they print paper out of thin air. Well, they don't print paper out of trees, actually. But We create money out of thin air. The banks don't create it at all. We do. Every time we go in and take out a loan, we create that money ourselves. The bank just prints it up and says, now that you've created that money, I'll take that money that you just created, which is the loan document you just filled out, because it doesn't have two signatures on it, doesn't have the bank signature on it as well, it only has yours on it. It only has one signature, and it says $50,000 on the top. Therefore, that is a $50,000 promissory note. We will take that, we'll trade that on the stock exchange, and we'll make you use our paper, which is all these little $100 bills, which all add up to $50,000, the same as your promissory note. But because you're using our paper, we're going to trick you into thinking we lend it to you, so now you're going to have to give all that paper back to us, plus interest. So we're going to launder all the money you created back into our hands, and you're going to have to give us a little bit extra, which means you're going to have to go and exploit the community in order to get that bit extra to give to us. That's what's wrong with the money system. That's the way it's created. If we could just go in and create our value, we just go in and sign, okay, $50,000. The bank gives us $50,000. Bang, deal's done. That's it. The transaction's over. There's no debt to the bank. You don't owe the bank anything. That's where the problem comes from. The problem comes from the bank itself, because we're not allowed to pass the promissory notes we create ourselves around to each other. I mean, what are you going to do? You give you a $50,000 promissory note? What are you going to do? How are you going to give me change? Okay, well, I could just write out a promissory note for $10 or $20 or whatever I did for you, and then you can change that. You can go and swap that with Kevin. When Kevin, you want to get some carrots off Kevin, you can give him the promissary note.
Hey there.
Can you hear me? Okay. You can still change this promissory note. You know what I'm saying? This is how it's supposed to work. We're supposed to create money ourselves and pass it. You want to buy some carrots off Kevin, you write our promissory note, you go give it to Kevin. Kevin wants to buy some tomatoes from me, he comes, gives me your promissory note. That's great, I can do that. I can give that to Paul for some vegetables that I want to get off him, or whatever I want to get off him. Paul wants to come and work for me, I'll give him the note that ended up, started off with Kevin, went through you, came to me. Now I'll give it to Paul for working for me today. You know what I mean? This is our money, we create it. That's the way it's supposed to be. We could do it that way, and if we were doing it that way, which is the way it used to be, these things used to be called receipts. I had a book. It was my grandfather's. I've lost it now. It was called A Book of Receipts, and it was a fantastic old book. It was an old journal, and it had recipes in it. A receipt used to be a recipe. You used to go and do work for someone. I'd go to some farm. You'd fix this guy's plowshares. The guy would give you a recipe for glue. Okay, beautiful recipe. You get this bark and you get this sap and you get this stuff and you mix it together. You got this incredibly powerful glue. You take that somewhere. You need some stuff from the bakery. Hey man, I've got this great recipe for glue. I need 3 loaves of bread. No worries. Give you the 3 loaves of bread. Gives you the recipe for the, give him the recipe for the glue. You keep it yourself, but you write him out the recipe. That was the receipt. That's how we used to trade. This is actually how we used to trade. I had a book of receipts that had all of this stuff in it. Recipes for glue, recipes for gardening, recipes for building a house, recipes for whatever. You know, a recipe didn't have to be something that you cook. It was just something that you make. Could be a recipe for a table. How to make a table, how to make a chair, how to make a rocking chair, how to shoe a horse, how to make glue, which plants you could eat, edible plants, edible this, blah, blah, blah. And all these old recipes, all this knowledge we used to pass around to each other, that was currency back in the old days. We could do that again. It makes sense to me. But I don't know what the transition will be, but we've got to get the debt that's attached to money off money. And the way to do that is to remove the banks, because the bank's only purpose is to launder what you create into their possession. No bank ever lent anything to anybody. All they did was steal from people. That is their purpose.
Yeah. And how do you... the question is, I know a lot of people work behind the scenes.
How do we break the program?
White hats, the white knights, the big
Look,
the guys.
I don't buy into all this behind the scenes stuff. I don't think there's white knights there going to save us. I think we've got to do it ourselves.
I totally agree, but we've got to have some guys up on the inside that are,
people that are awake, I hope. I mean, all the way that all this system has been exposed, I mean, the way the world is getting so negative, this is what's waking us up. You can't have the light without the dark, you know, and if the world wasn't getting so negative, we wouldn't be having this conversation. We wouldn't be waking up. We wouldn't be discovering the things that we've been discovering. We wouldn't be so close to freedom as what we are now. We're so close to jail as well, which has brought us so close to freedom. Yeah, you can't have one without the other. If we were just bumbling along the way we have been for the last few hundred years, we would never be having this opportunity for freedom. So, I mean, I don't know how to escape the money system. It's a program that's very, very deeply ingrained to people. But I believe that if we can at least implement an honest monetary system by alerting people to the real nature of how this one works, because like who was it, Woodrow Wilson or Andrew Jackson? Said that if people ever understood the rank injustice of the monetary system, there'd be a revolution before morning. Yeah. If people can figure out how corrupt this money system is and why they are struggling in debt so much, it's all fiction. All of it is fiction. It's all a creation of this money system. None of it is necessary. Then we could change this money system. And I believe that over a period of even maybe as short as a generation, we'd realize that we don't need it. We go back to trading recipes and go back to trading knowledge, go back to being all that we could be. We'd realize that there's a different harmonic. We don't have to base our lives on collecting this stuff. We can base our lives on experience the art of our lives and become all that we could be and see what we can create, see what we can come up with. We could take this planet to an incredible heights. We really could. We could take human consciousness to incredible directions and achieve amazing things. You know, human creative potential is absolutely phenomenal. And the only thing that holds us back is this economic system, because we believe it's real mainly because people don't know how it works. So I think that's a big part of it, just explaining to people how it works. Again, we need workshops. We need re-education. We need to reorient people into who and what they are, what's the sort of system that they're involved in is, and how to approach their public trustees to get some accountability out of these people. I mean, I'm not suggesting revolution or the overthrowing of any governments. All I want is accountability. And responsibly and integrity, that's all I want. I mean, and I'm quite prepared to talk to these people. I'll public debate any politician, any police officer, anybody. Let's get up on a stage and talk about this stuff, any of them. I've challenged every world leader to a public debate, any of them. Happy to do it. Let's talk.
We've got to get the system away from the private central banks, though, and back into where the governments themselves are, the treasuries
Where we're the treasuries. Something I want to do is create, with the Full Circle Project, wherever I go, I want to create workshops, like a thing called the, Urban Agricultural Cooperative. Okay. UAC. You get a garden, get a town, like anywhere, get Dublin. Okay. You got an area of Dublin, just outside Dublin. You got a village, whatever. You get 10 people who want to put in, market gardens. So put in market gardens. You keep one bed for yourself. You sell two beds to a co-op. You give two beds to a co-op. You get the co-op money. You get all these, say, you've got 10 families in the village who all have these market gardens. They put in the, all the produce or most of the produce that they make into this co-op. They sell it to the rest of the community. Everybody who is part of the co-op and everybody who buys from the co-op, all these people get a little identity thing. Yes, we're all part of this co-op. So what the co-op does with the money it makes from the gardens is it starts its own bank, and then it lends out interest-free loans to everybody who's part of the co-op. So you start your own banking system. Okay, you want us to use your paper? We'll do it, but we're going to do it through our bank, so we're not in your central bank. This is our cooperative bank. It's a private bank. You've got to be in the cooperative to be able to use the bank, and you get loans from the bank at 1%, which is just enough to cover paperwork and run the bank. Something like that. So that frees you from their system straight. I mean, eventually we want a system where we've got no banks at all. But we need a transition to get away from their central banking system. People are stuck on a banking system. Okay, they think it's real. Fine. Let's make our own through these cooperatives that are local to our own community. So this little village has its own cooperative. It has its own bank, and it lends to that village. That's us. You know, you want to come and borrow from this bank, you've got to join the cooperative, you know. Do this, in every town. This will really undermine their banking system. They would know what to do if the people did that.
Well, you've got to stay in touch with us, Max, because they're developing a project like that on Tirnasaur. I think I've just seen in there, Kev wants to go for a very short break. So are you happy to go and have a cup of tea, make another cup of tea and come back? Because I'm on fire here. You're on fire.
I'm good, guys. It's your show. You just say, Max, it's break time. I'll just talk to the cows, come home. So
5 minutes. But that's just everyone, you know, hold this thought, because we're carrying on from exactly where we are when we come back, because this is brilliant stuff. Okay. So, and I'd like maybe Paul would probably want to come on and have a little chat, I'm sure. He's sitting there.
Yeah, sure.
A lot of things mulling over that he's dying to ask as well. Max, you're brilliant. This is a really exciting show. Okay, let's go make a cup of tea, and we'll be back in 5 minutes, everyone. hi, okay, we're back, and this is getting very exciting. But I do at this point want to drag Kevin on, even though he's a bit reluctant, because it's so Kevin's thing. So Kevin, just if there's anything you want to talk to Max about.
Yeah, hi guys. Just sitting in the background here listening, and on the break there talking to the guys, and Tommy convinced me to come on. The reason why I didn't want to is because I'm just really enjoying this conversation and listening to Max speak and the flow there. So like I'm online now, I'm here now. So if you want to just continue and if there's anywhere where I can jump in, I will.
Nice segues, Kevin.
Well, I'll leave you and Max to talk for a minute now. I'm lighting a cigarette. I want to come in a little while and take it.
Well, do you mind if we go back a little bit of some of the things you were saying? When you were talking about the sigils and the symbols that they use in the court and the robes and how it's all designed energetically to sort of keep people disempowered. I'm wondering, Max, do you go any further with that idea in the terms of, you say sigil, sigil is a magical word. Do you go any further with that idea of magic and the law and how words are being used to influence people and create this false reality?
Oh, look, words, it's all word magic. We're locked into a whole system of word magic, especially English. It's incredible. I mean, the whole register your, when you register, Regis, the Crown Corporation. You're registering with the Crown Corporation. You apply, application. Beg, apply. Apple, beg. You're begging to be registered. You're begging for their jurisdiction. You know what I mean? All this, it's all magic. The whole lot of it's word magic. And they've got their language as well.
Forms.
Yeah, and they've got their language as well, which is legalese, which they run parallel to English. And you think that apply means I'm just, this means I'm filling out a form. It's an application, I'm just applying for permission to do this. It's begging. You're begging for permission. So you're immediately giving them jurisdiction over you. Why are you begging to someone? Are you a beggar? Is there someone that controls you? But you don't know you're doing it. You just think that's what the word means, But we don't know what the words mean. What does the word individual mean? All this sort of stuff. People don't know what it means. What does the word understand mean? People don't understand what it means. People don't realize what it means.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because a lot of time what we're applying for is licenses, and you submit that application for
exactly.
A license.
Exactly. They tell you.
But a license, if you look it up in the blacks, a license is permission to do something that is already lawful. Now, if all government power comes from the people, if the government claimed to have the power to give you permission to do something that's already lawful, then why would you then ask them for that permission if it comes from you in the first place?
Exactly, because you think you're a beggar and you think that they have control over you. You've admitted that they do. You've asked them to please have control over you because you don't understand the language. See, we don't understand the language that we speak. That's the problem. And people's understanding of reality is based on their understanding of the language. They don't even understand their language. How can they ever understand reality? How can they ever understand energy? And how can they ever understand sigils and all this sort of stuff? Everything like that, that isn't even taught to us, the energetic state of things. If you look at trivium, and quadrivium, the seven liberal arts, one of them is geometry, because they talk about the geometric reality, the geometric nature of reality. All of these things create certain energy fields, five-pointed stars, all these things. You see people in certain uniforms, they got a hat on in a certain way with a certain sigil on the hat. It creates an energetic field. You may not think it does. People may think, oh, no, you're just crazy. Okay, really, go stand in the presence of a police officer and tell me how you feel. Do you feel different in the company of this gentleman? Why? Why? Go and put on a uniform. Go and put on a military uniform. Go to an army disposal store. Go and buy yourself a uniform and put it on. You feel different when you wear a uniform because it contains and it's got sigils. You go put on a military uniform with medals and stripes and stars on it. You feel very, very different when you're wearing this uniform because it sets up an energetic resonance. And that's what uniforms do. That's what the sigils do. They actually do have this ability to put you in a state of disempowerment or empowerment. You put a uniform on, you feel quite empowered. When you're in the presence of someone who's got a uniform on, you actually feel a little bit disempowered. it's an interesting thing, depending on the uniform, of course, depending on the sigils that are on the uniform. And the courtrooms are set up this way. They're set up with the dock and the bar and all this sort of stuff and certain shapes and symbols and sigils everywhere.
And the black robes.
The black robes. They summons you. You know, it's a summons. They're calling the spirit, you know. The whole, it's word magic. The whole lot is word magic. Yeah. And it works because you don't know who you are and you think that you are part of this magical system. You think you're the name. You think that all these people are something other than just people and they create this whole thing. It's an act. That's why they're all acts. It's a play. You know, it's a play. You're on a stage. It's a play. And it's all maritime admiralty and all that sort of stuff. But even going down the whole rabbit hole of maritime admiralty and common law, it's all fiction. A whole lot's fiction. Ultimately, it's all fiction because it was all created by man. What you are is man. What they are is man. And here we are, a whole bunch of...
If you're spending hours researching these things, then you're not living. You know what I mean? And this is part of the trap as well because you're getting wrapped up in another word game.
Exactly.
I'm sure you must have heard of the late, great Terence McKenna. And, excuse me, he said it really well. He said that the real secret of reality, the real secret of magic, is that the world is made of words. And if you understand the meaning of those words, then you can have control over reality.
Exactly. That is absolutely brilliant. That's it in a nutshell. You've got to understand what the language is that you're speaking. Know what the words actually mean. Know what you're saying. When people talk to you, like I said, when someone says, what is your name? You know, it's my, it signifies ownership. What is the name that I own? You've asked me, what name do I own? And like I said, I can go through that whole thing. The only thing I can possibly claim is man. And that's based on reliable information from the Anthropological Society. But I can't really claim ownership to it because everybody owns that name. But you know, people don't even think about that. What is your name? They've asked you, what name do you own? Okay. And what name do you own? What is ownership? See, we don't think that way. We just go, oh, my name's Max. Bang, gotcha. Mm. You know, you think you own the name. You didn't even think about what you said because you're trained not to think about what you said. This is just language. These are just pronouns and these are just words that this is how we join sentences together. But they don't ever actually tell you what the words mean. This has been because they took trivium and quadrivium and seven liberal arts that I talked about before. The trivium, you know, grammar, logic and rhetoric. People don't understand grammar, logic, and rhetoric. They don't understand grammar, what the grammar means. What does the word mean? Grammar, grimoire. It's a spell.
Yep, the magical book.
It's a spell. People say to me, a spell is a series of words. No, a word is a series of spells. That's why it's called grammar. You know, what is the word saying? What are you saying when you speak, you know?
I use this as an example to explain to people the importance of symbolism. When you're talking about the symbolism in, you know, corporate logos or whatever it is, I say, well, look at the alphabet. What's the alphabet but a collection of symbols? And if I can get the right symbols and put them in the right combination, I've created a thought form. And if I get a big enough string of these together and I make a paragraph, I can completely change your worldview by the use of my words.
It's a spell. It's a spell. What do they teach you to do when you go to school? It's the first thing they teach you to do. They teach you to spell. What are you doing when you're spelling? You're casting spells. If you think in language, if they train you to think in language and the language is a series of spells, what are you doing? You're spelling reality. It's a spell. Yeah. You're in a matrix. It's in a word-based, paper-based reality. It's not real. You are flesh.
I'd love to jump in here for a second, just because you're on this, because I'm on a, you know, on a very kind of woo-woo level compared to all this, because I believe that, you know, when you're talking about casting spells and the power of language and the energies that go with a spoken word or even in a written word, you know, it's all energy coming through. But it's you're actually dealing with the telluric realms of you know, how our dimensions are put together. And on the telluric is where you have the elementals. And when these magicians, whether it be dark or white or whatever, do their magic and they summon these elementals, you know, they're not there to be bossed around, but you can be subconsciously doing it by using words that you don't even know you're using. I mean, the guys who do perform magic rituals know exactly the right sounds and the right words to kind of try and control the elements, the elementals, which is just, you know, you have your etheric body or astral body, but the telluric realms where a lot of this energy takes place is very manipulable, and it shouldn't be abused. And by using all these spells and words and things, you know, the ones who know exactly how to do it are the black magicians, because they've learned how to do it. But we do it not knowing what we're doing, you know, because we just spout out certain things and we don't even realize what we're saying. But also the fact that our DNA is language as well. You know, they've found that, you know, unravel DNA, and there's actually encoded language in our DNA.
Of course there is. Yeah, of course there is.
Everything is controlled. And by using these kind of spells, we can actually change the atomic structure of the reality around us, you know. So,
well, a lot of these spells are like that. They're designed like that. A lot of them are based on frequency, and it isn't the word necessarily. It's the sound the word makes, you know.
Yeah.
And you'll find that in politician speeches. You'll listen to a political speech, and the guy will rave on for ages and say absolutely nothing. But during the speech, there'll be certain sounds that are made. It might be the end of one sentence and the beginning of another, and it will create a certain sigil. Because a sigil, a sigil that you may see, a symbol that you can look and see, a visual sigil, also has an oral counterpart. Every symbol has a sound that goes with that symbol. And the sound may be a word. It may not be a word. It may just be a sound. It sounds like a word. It may not even sound like a word. It may just be a sound. But each sigil has a sound. And so you can put these sigils in political speeches. The way you can listen to a political speech and get numbed into this trance. And at the end of it, you come out and go, well, what was that all about? What did he just say to you? What was just implanted in your brain and your subconscious through the sigils that were put in that speech? And that's the way they do it. They do it. They put the sigils in the speeches as well. And this is very, very ancient knowledge that goes way, way, way back.
I think it's very interesting when you can actually trace this through the secret societies, even the grammar, the logic, and the rhetoric side of it, and the use of words, the black robes. It all goes back to, as you say, very ancient times, and you can trace this through those ancient times, even to the fact that we call a judge a magi straight. I think is fascinating, because a magi is a word for a magician, and straight is a word for strategy. So they're magical strategians.
Yeah. They tell you, Kevin. They tell you what they're doing. If you understand how the language works, they tell you exactly what they're doing. It's all there. It's all there in plain sight for people to see if they understood the language. But because they don't get taught the trivium, they don't understand. They took that out of the school system about 140 years ago, the trivium. Before that, people used to know this sort of stuff, you know.
I'm just looking at a question. Sorry, go on, Antonia.
I was going to say, Max, did you know, I mean, this all is kind of making me think, you know, that back to the sort of the Tower of Babel story, you know, where the gods or whoever, the Anunnaki, whoever you want to call it, came down, and obviously the human beings were very much in tune to frequencies and language. And they, remember, their languages were dispersed because they built their stairway to heaven, whatever, you know, what people think of a stargate, whatever it may be. But you remember, suddenly the gods are angry. I don't believe that to be God, but wherever these guys were, and they disperse the human race, and they confuse their language in the Tower of Babel. You remember? And they obviously did something to confuse us, like they're doing now, with the water and this, to sort of disconnect us with the memories of these frequencies. But our criminal, I know the court, the house in the EU, whatever, in I think is in Brussels, is shaped like the famous painting of the Tower of Babel. But our new big criminal court here in Dublin, there's a whole brand new building they built, which is all our courts are in there now, the criminal, the this, the that, the other, and it's shaped in the exact same as the Tower of Babel. It's that structure, you look at it, it's that famous painting of the Tower of Babel. Yep. Once again, to confuse your language, to confuse
the EU building as well is modelled on it, and it seems to be a very common theme that they're doing now.
Well, you got some weird stuff going on there in Dublin. I was there last year. That needle you've got in the middle of town, that's pretty interesting.
Oh, bad feng shui.
The antenna.
Oh, man, that's like...
Not
that's,
nice.
makes you think the archons are real, that one.
Well.
I don't know what that thing is. It doesn't feel very comfortable about those. It's totally very, very uncomfortable,
I was talking to John Weigel earlier on, and that's what I'm going to be doing my show on next week, is on the dangers of Wi-Fi. And we did actually mention this, and underneath this spire in Dublin, there's a manhole beside it, and the odd time, if you're in Dublin, it's open, and they're doing work on it. I throw my eyes down once or twice, and there's a lot of computer equipment under there, more than is necessary for a little light on the top of it, like, you know.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah, what's it really doing, that thing? You know, it's setting out some frequency, that thing. That's very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
There's a question there in the chat box that I think might be good to throw in here. Somebody's asking, in a land where the sheep are content to owe 400 billion, how can we change the mindset? So I suppose, like, how do we change the spell where so many people are actually, they'll actually fight against you to hang on to this false belief system?
Well, it's a very confronting thing, you know. It's a program. See, that's the thing. A lot of the people in the truth movement, in inverted commas, or the alternate media, alternate research movement, whatever you want to call it, that's something people don't realize. You know, once you are awake to this, it all becomes so incredibly obvious that you can't understand how other people can't see it. But when you try to present this to people, these people have been locked into a matrix. They're locked into a system that they firmly believe is real. And when you bring the truth to them, what you're asking them to do is to put the rest of their life on hold, put everything they believe to be true in the bin and look at reality. You're telling them the world is completely different to what they thought it was. And what you're telling them is that everything that they've done up to that point in their life has been completely and utterly meaningless because they've been looking at the world from the wrong perspective. This is an incredibly confronting thing for people, and they don't want to know, and they shut down completely. And once they shut down, if you present them information too fast and they reject the information and shut down, then you've closed them off, usually for good. You've got to be very gentle with people. I firmly believe the best thing to do to wake up your community is to lead by example in what you do, become a shining light in your community, be a pleasure to be around, be the guy who's always happy, who's always positive, who's always putting his hand out and helping people. And people want to know why you're so happy, why you're so positive, why life is just not a stress to you. And well, it's because I understand how reality works. And then you give them little bits of snippets of information. You give them half a cup. So then they can go and drink that half a cup, and they'll come back and they'll ask you to give them another half a cup. And then eventually they'll come back and they'll start telling you stuff that you already know. Because you've opened the doorway for them.
That's great when
that
happens, isn't it?
Yeah, and because you've opened the doorway for them and allowed them to discover things for themselves, because you can never tell anybody the truth. The truth can never be told. It has to be realized. And the best way to help people realize it is to give them a little bit of information and to lead by example in all that you do and help them discover the truth for themselves. That's the problem that a lot of people have. A lot of people see this system and they go into fear and they start screaming, you know, New World Order, you know, control, tyranny, on the street with a megaphone like Alex Jones. Just does not help. You've just gone straight into fear and you're saying, and people are going, wow, this guy's terrified. I don't want to be like him. I don't even want to know what he knows, even if it's true. Hey, I'm happy. I don't want to go there. Yeah, because I don't want to function like that. I can't live my life in fear. And that's the problem with a lot of people. They wake up to this information, they go straight into fear, and then they don't know where to go from there. Because it is very, I mean, we have a lot to be concerned about. There is a lot to fear, really. You know, if we don't pay attention. But I think it's all opportunity. I think that people are waking up to it. More and more people are waking up all the time now. I mean, it's amazing. People are wandering around going, what is happening to the world? All you've got to do is provide the right information for these people to come across. That's why I've tried to do the shows the way I've done them, kept them very calm, very rational, very common sense, so that people who are just waking up can discover this information and they can find it to actually be empowering, because now they know what the problem is, they can start implementing the solution. And the solution is for you to rediscover yourself via all the mechanisms that I explained to you earlier. That's who you are. That's what you are. That's what everybody is. And once we do this, once you really understand what you are, you understand this is just a biological computer with a frequency that inhabits this computer, this vessel. You're just a frequency of consciousness inhabiting a vessel for the experience, and you're perfect. You're absolutely perfect. You may be imperfect in certain ways that this system looks at you. You may be imperfect as much as maybe you've got a cripple or whatever, you know, something's wrong, but you're perfect at having the experience that you're here to experience, because what you're here to do is to be you, obviously, because that's who you are. And no one can be you and look at the world from that perspective better than you. So why would you consider yourself to be anything but perfect? Because you're perfect at being you, and being you is what you came here to be, obviously, because that's who you are. You look at yourself like that, and then you start looking at everybody else like that. where's the problem? Why would I possibly have a problem with these people? They're just another frequency of consciousness that comes from the same place I do that's inhabiting a different computer. Essentially, there's only one of us here looking at the world from all these different perspectives. Where is the problem? Once you start looking at the world like that, then all of the barriers break down. You know, to me, that is the incredibly empowering, and that is how we change things. We change our perspective of who and what we are. We change our perspective of what other people are. And when you really discover yourself and respect yourself, then respect for others comes by default. Then the whole world changes in one day if we could just look at things from a different perspective. So it's got to come down to re-educating the people, you know.
It really is one of the greatest acts of defiance, really, to be to feel love for yourself and feel love for other people.
It is
the greatest act of defiance to against the world system. They don't want you happy, and they don't want you feeling love for yourself and love for other people. You know,
because love is the answer, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
It I know is. We all sound like hippies here, but the frequency of love when it's all working well, it's the perfect frequency.
But really, I mean, you can look at it from that perspective that I've just offered, and there's a logical left brain perspective of who and what you are. For those people who are locked into that left brain system, well, there it is. I'll just give it to you in a logical way that really can stand up to no, there's no argument against what I just said. That's really just, I mean, how do you negate that? How do you deny any of that? That's true. That's what you are. That's what everybody is. So where's the problem? Mm-hmm. You know, and it's a very, very empowering perspective to have. And I know people that have changed their perspective of who and what they are to that. And really it's a matter of self-discovery. It isn't a matter of believing what I say. You know, just listen to it and think about it. You'll find that it resonates and you'll go, wow, that's just, it's logical. It makes perfect sense. Of course that's who and what I am. Of course that's who and what everybody is. So where's the problem? All the problems that we have with each other are a result of this system. They're programs. This is a biological computer. You program it. You install programs into the computer. It has a cache. It has memory. All in the water. I was saying to someone a couple of months ago in an interview that they said about a clone. Do you think a clone would have a soul? And I said, well, if they cloned you, it would have to have your soul because it's a frequency. You are a frequency that comes from the surrounding field. If they created a biological computer from your DNA that was tuned to exactly the same frequency as your consciousness, that computer would have to be another version of you. Would it be exactly like you? Well, that depends on the programs that are installed in the computer along the way. Based on the influences it has, it may grow up like you, it may grow up completely different to you, depending on the programs that are installed in the computer along the way. You know what I mean? So when you look at it that way, it all makes sense. And you can understand why people are the way they are, why the world's the way it is, and you can see what the solution to it is. And that's what all of these problems are. All of these problems are presenting us with an opportunity to implement the solution, and the solution is to know yourself. Really know yourself. That's what it's all about. And that's where things like ayahuasca come in. That's why ayahuasca is so beneficial to people, because it's an internal thing that peels away the layers of your personality like an onion and shows you who you are. And that's what you need to know, because that's what you're here to do and to be and to discover.
It's as if we can starve them out, you know, because they feed on our fear and they feed on our anger and despair. And so if we can starve them out, it's one way of making them, you know.
That's a really good way of putting it, actually, Paul. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and it's fear-based mind control, the whole thing. Of course, they feed on our fear. It's all based on fear. It's fear of scarcity that money provides, so the fear of being judged by your peers poorly if you don't look a certain way or dress a certain way or have the latest exploding shoes, you know. It's all fear-based mind control, you know.
But the fear is, because I am one of these people who believes in the archonic world, but not so much that there's just hundreds of little demons running around. You know, they're elemental energetic forms as well, but they're programmed as well. Like, everything is part of the program, and there's certain ones that are programmed to feed on the fear frequency, and those are the ones that, you know, will, it's not that they're evil or anything, it's just that's their food, and it's a program, so they're going to be attracted to people who set that frequency off because they want to eat, you know. And
well, yeah,
frequency, then you're not going to be as control, you know, you're not going to have as much.
Well, everybody needs to eat. Everybody needs an energetic sustenance as well. Everybody needs energetic food. And we're all connected to source. And we can all download directly from source. But because we're disconnected through this system and everything that we're taught and believe, our most ready source of energy is the people around us. So we harvest energy from each other. It's a perfectly natural thing for people to do in this situation, you know. You can't blame them.
No, but I always like to think that, you know, people can change their diet, you know. So if you have these kind of programmed elementals, whatever, that whatever you want to call them, archons or whatever, and they're, you know, they've been used to a diet of fear, if you slowly change your frequency, maybe they'll start changing the diet that they want to eat, you know. They're worth saving too, you know. We're all part of Source, and if we're going to move forward, we've got to bring everyone with us forward, and even the darkest and darkest of entities, I believe,
they can look after themselves. They'll go the path that they're supposed to go. You know, the problem that we're facing, the real dilemma and the big obstacle, you know, the hurdle, is to wake people up here to who and what they are, how to break the programs out of them. And this is where all the free man movement and stuff's been so good, because it's been exposing the fiction. This is what I hoped the OPPT would do with that one filing. But then it got hijacked. People wanted to create money systems around it and all this sort of stuff. The only thing that was valuable in the OPPT was that one filing that said, if you be, you are free. The rest of it was noise. But I thought that one filing, hey, if you believe in this paper-based reality, you believe you're locked into that paper matrix, and you believe in a birth certificate and all that stuff, well, hey, here's a piece of paper that says that if you're alive, if you be, then you're free. Do you feel free yet? You know, how can I convince you that you're free, that it's a paper-based world? Well, here's a piece of paper that says you're free. It's even registered in their UCC system that they used to enslave you. It's in that system. It says you're free. Do you feel free yet? You know, but no, it got hijacked. People, all the new age people got on there and went, oh, and all these, a lot of the alternative research movement that have a vested interest in maintaining the fight because they get good income from it. Oh, no, don't go there. It's the new world order. Don't sign up for anything. Nothing to sign up to. It's just a feeling. Do you feel free yet? But of course, within 2 weeks, it was hijacked and turned into this whole, you know, money thing and CVACs, and we're going to create a new system. No, we don't need any system at all. We don't need to be organized at all. New world order, no. We need a new world, but forget the order. We don't need order because nature is not orderly. Consciousness is not orderly, you know? You know, everyone's scared of the new world, but what do you want? The old world order? Look what it's done. Look at the position we're in. We don't want to go stay here. You know, everyone's scared of change. Everyone attacks anything that might bring about any unity or empowerment. It's, oh, no, it's the new world order. Oh, my God, you know, it's a program. All these people are programmed, you know.
There's another question in the chat there, just that you mentioned money. What's your opinion on Bitcoin?
Look, I don't know. It's just digital. I mean, I don't know. I haven't really looked at it. It's digital currency, though, isn't it? I really want digital currency. I want something I can pass around if I'm going to have currency at all. I mean, I don't keep anything in bank. I don't keep anything. Well, it's just a digital global currency, isn't it? What does that look like?
Yeah. That has crossed my mind before, but I think with the Bitcoin, it's sort of like it can't be regulated or controlled or managed by government. So in that sense, it has the potential to completely negate government, because if I can exchange with you without having to go through a middleman,
yeah, well, that's great.
It's pretty much taking the power away, you know.
Well, if you exchange with me, you send me a Bitcoin, I want to be able to go to a machine and pull that Bitcoin out and get some paper that I can then go and buy something with, because I'm not going to go and buy from the shop using a plastic card that's attached to a digital account. I've never bought anything on a card, and I never, ever will. I have a card, but I use it to draw cash out of an ATM so I can go and buy things. If I can do that with Bitcoin, I'm happy to use it. But if I have to buy something digitally, which leaves a digital paper trail for people to know what I'm doing and semi-advertising and all the stuff they do, and I don't want to use it. How do I go to a bank and draw out Bitcoin and go to a shop and buy a loaf of bread with it? That's what I want to know.
I'm just seeing there as well in the chat that they have Bitcoin ATMs now.
Okay, well, there you go.
So I think
you've just answered my question.
But I think you're right to have that... what's the word, like, sort of skepticism about it, because I had it myself. I look at it and I go, this is global currency. But on further analysis, it seems to be one for the people.
Well, it's good if it is. If it is, good luck to it. I mean, hopefully maybe it'll be a transitional currency that we can use to a situation where we need no currency.
Max, what do you think of this whole supposed whether it's happening or not. Yes, it is. No, it's not. Who it is, who it isn't. The whole global reset that's supposedly rumbling about to be happening.
Theatre for the masses. Just wait. Something's about to happen. Look out. Just wait. Don't do anything. It's all about to change. Disclosure's coming. It's imminent. It's all imminent. Everything's imminent. Going to be a change. Don't do anything. Sit back. Just wait. That's what all these things are about.
And what about the whole Dino thing?
Look, you know, maybe it'll come back on. I mean, to me, money is fiction. Money is there to provide scarcity. If money's involved with the central banking system, then whatever it is, it's of no interest to me. It's all fraud.
That's fair enough, yeah.
A lot of it is theatre. To me, it's just all theatre. To me, the economic system of this planet is fiction. It exists on paper. It's numbers on a screen. We've got a planet here. People are so in such belief that the economic system is real that they will use this system to prop it up, and they'll keep wanting to prop it up, and they'll keep going and keep exploiting this planet until it looks like the moon. And then once there's everybody's dead and the whole planet's dead and there's five or six guys left here, they'll be going, my God, we've got to go and find another planet to exploit because I still owe money to the bank. You know? That's the mentality of these people. To me, it's all fiction. Whatever it is, I don't care. It doesn't affect me. I just do what I do, and I use money because I'm forced to. I say, yeah, bring it all down, crash the whole system. I have nothing to fear from the impending crash of the global slavery system. You know, I really don't care about the whole monetary system.
And Max, what do you think of, we all know with false flags and all this kind of stuff, what they're there for and to, you know, but what's going on with all this, the more recent ones, which, you know, because these psychopaths have no problem, you know, running into a school and shooting, like in Columbine, you know, a load of kids, that's nothing to them. They've no problem blowing up a load of people in 9/11 or going into the Middle East and pretending it's whoever, you know, and bombing a market in the middle of Iraq, all these kind of false flag stuff. But the Boston bombing and the Sandy Hook thing, that all this stuff about, you know, coming out then, oh, it's all crisis actors, the kids didn't exist. What's all that about? Why would they go to so much bother in setting up a false flag that was a false flag within a false flag? I mean,
I think a lot of this has been done to vilify the alternate media, to vilify the alternate the truth movement, turn everything into a conspiracy. I mean, you saw what happened with Sandy Hook. The amount of the thing that really raised a red flag for me in Sandy Hook was the video that was posted on YouTube of Gene Rosen rehearsing his lines. Remember Gene Rosen, the friendly old man who took the children in? There was so much wrong with that interview that he gave because of where he was and how would he have not known this was going on and all this sort of stuff. You know, why would the kids have gone to his house? And then the video of him rehearsing his lines, all this stuff. There's so much wrong with that. Who put that online? How did that get online? Why does that video exist? It's there to raise all these red flags in the truth community so that he's going to start getting hate mail. All the kids' parents are starting to get hate mail, all from truthers, right? Half of them are probably CIA agents. I mean, just doing it, you know, but they've created this situation to vilify the truth movement. We've just had laws come in here in Queensland, Australia, where more than three people gathered in a group can be classed as a gang and arrested and possibly even prosecuted under terrorist charges. This is to protect the citizens from bikie gangs. If you look at the legislation, it doesn't say anything about bikie gangs in the legislation. All it says is groups of more than three people. So this is all part and parcel with the same thing. It's all to vilify the alternative research community. The whole Boston bombing thing, these guys were truthers, weren't they? You know, the whole the Sandy Hook thing, the guy's mother was a truther, you know? It's all designed. It's all designed to make people like us, people who question the system, make us out to be, we're obviously people who are dissenters, we're against the government, we're trying to rock the boat, we're unstable, we're likely to go and blow people up. That's what this is about.
Remember that video they sent of that father, supposedly who'd lost his daughters, and he's kind of laughing before he knows he's on camera, and then he does this actory bit, like going into role, and then pretends to be all sad. That was released on purpose, and you're thinking why, and then they set up all these pages looking for donations to the victims, but they purposely kind of did it a day before so that everyone would go, oh, my God, look, that was set up a day before.
Yeah, yeah, it was set up to be an obvious conspiracy.
Then we say the kids didn't exist, and then we all look like Egypt, yeah.
It was set up to be an obvious conspiracy, obviously done. There was so much to that that was uncomfortable. Sandy Hook, it was absolutely set up to vilify the truth movement. I'm absolutely convinced of it. Not just to take the guns. I mean, that's part of it. They want to take the guns from the American people. But they really want to vilify anybody who's speaking out against the government, anybody who can see through this system. They want to paint you as a nut. And the best way to do that is to look what these people are doing. They're ringing up and they're abusing parents who've just had their children killed. That's how unstable these truth people are. That poor old man who saved these children, this man's getting thousands upon thousands of phone calls and emails, hate mail from these truthers to think that, you know, all these poor children. I mean, how could these truthers, you can see it. It's fiction. It's theater. It's been constructed this way. And the Boston bombing, the marathon bombing, I mean, this is obviously set up the same way as well. And to use normal household kitchen appliances, oh, yeah, we can come into your house. Yeah, you got a pressure cooker. You're a terrorist. They can get you for anything they want to get you for, you know. Tapping your phone records, you know, all this, the NSA stuff. I mean, and now even with what they want to do to Snowden, they want to put him in jail. One guy said he deserves to be executed. He reported a crime. He exposed criminal activity of the United States government. Why isn't anybody questioning that? Why hasn't Obama been put in jail for killing 11 people in Pakistan a couple of weeks ago? 11 party, a whole wedding party. Why has he been put in jail for that? Why has he been put in jail for threatening to go and attack Syria? What did he say? Oh, it's not going to be an act of war. It'll just be a limited strike, no boots on the ground. Yeah, right. What, you mean exactly what the Japanese did in Pearl Harbor? No problem. You know? Why did you consider Pearl Harbor an act of war if that's what you've been doing to every country ever since, you know? America is the terrorist of the world. The United States is the global terrorist of the world. They've caused so much problem and so much war, and not the people, but the government. And the government is controlled by European banking cartels. The whole thing's theater.
Do you think Obama actually has any say in any of that?
He's a puppet. He's a mouthpiece. But he's obviously corrupt. Otherwise, he wouldn't be in the position that he's in. He wouldn't be doing it. I mean, would you do that? Would I do that? Nah. Kill my family. Not doing it. Sorry. Not going to do it. I won't be your mouthpiece. You put me in there, I'll bring the whole system down. I'll do the right thing. Oh, no, your hands are tied, this and that. You can't. Rubbish. Rubbish. You're as corrupt as the rest of
them. There's a lot of stuff online by people who think that I'm trying to put it in the right way, that he's actually on board, but he's going from the inside, and these NSA acts and everything about, you know, seization of your property and your whatever in a state of emergency is all been put in place to actually take down the cabal, and it's a plan within a plan.
No. This is all these people saying, look, there's people in there. You don't have to do anything. It's all good. Just sit. Just wait. It's imminent. It's imminent. It's coming. Yeah. It's all good. Remember, just sit. No, it's all good. Don't rock the boat. We're doing it. We're taking care of you. It's all good. Rubbish. Yeah. Rubbish. It's theater. Wake up to yourselves. It's theater. Remember who and what you are. Stand up and hold your public trustees accountable, and let's take the world in a different direction. Let's do it today. Let's do it now. Let's stand up and ask these people for proof of claim that they have right of ownership over us. Let's ask them to, let's point out to them that they're public trustees that we employ to manage our infrastructure for us, and get them to explain to us, get them to show cause why they should not be prosecuted for human rights violations simply because of the state of the planet that we're living in. If you've got one person in your country in a state of hardship due to legislation that's been imposed by your government, that government needs to show cause why it should be held for human rights abuses. That's the bottom line. Show me right now and we can move forward. If you can't show me this proof of claim, then we'll take you to an international tribunal and we'll have you tried. That's the position we need to take. You know, we need to start respecting each other and stop letting these public trustees that we employ destroy this world because we believe what they write on their stupid pieces of paper is real. It's all fiction. Wake up to yourselves, people. We've got to fix this planet because if we don't, we're not going to have a planet because you're all locked into a dream. You all believe these public trustees have power over you because you don't know who you are because they've taught you that you're nobody. Well, where did you get that idea? Is it your idea or is it an idea that's been put in your head? Think about who you are, people. Now, we've got a real opportunity for some change here, but it needs audience participation. Wake up to yourselves. I mean, I've been coming on air and I've been speaking calmly and politely to you for the last 7 years. Are you listening to a word that I've been saying? You know, because we've got a serious situation here. That's my attitude towards the whole thing, guys.
Hey, yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah.
And Kevin, is there ways that we can? I know that with the DDI and people like that here, you know, they're trying their best to take our governments to court over these issues, to international court, you know, the under the Odious Debt Act and all that in the UN. But is the amount of kind of legal obstacles that have been put in their way, and never mind the media coming on kind of trying to vilify anyone who wants to do that.
Well, see, that's the DDI. They're using the political model as it is, and that's fine to do it that way. But I think from what Max is saying, it's not about legal cases or anything like that. It's just as an individual thing about understanding your essence, who you are as an individual, and living from that essence. And when you do that, that's the most powerful you can be.
Exactly. There is no remedy to be found in their system. Anywhere in their system, the only remedy to be found is in you. Knowing who and what you are and standing in the power of your flesh. Do not take a backward step to these people and ask them to show you proof of claim for anything that they're claiming. You know, ask them to show cause why they shouldn't be held in breach of trust. But you see, you can't, one person standing up and doing this, you'll get taken out. This is why I've spent so much focus on building community, breaking down the barriers between you and your neighbors. You know, you've got to be a shining light. You've got to be leading by example in all that you do. You've got to be building strong ties with your community around you because you need to stand together. You know, if you had one city stand up and do this from and approach it from this attitude, you could change that city in one day because the politicians in the legal system have nowhere to go. If you present the arguments that I presented to you today, where can they go from those arguments? They can go nowhere. Because what you've laid on the table is completely and utter common sense for all to see. And all you're asking for is an explanation. All you're asking for is accountability. You're not making demands. You're not making accusations. You're simply asking them to please explain. Okay?
Yeah.
You know, they have nowhere to go from there. If we did that, it's game over. That's the last thing they want. This is why you've got to break down these barriers that you've got with your community because they're all fiction. Their programs, social barriers, economic barriers. This guy looks the wrong way, dresses the wrong way, he listens to the wrong music, he votes for the wrong political party. All this, it's rubbish. It's bullshit. I've got a bigger front door than him. I'm a better man than him. What is this rubbish that's fed to us? You know, I've got more stuff than you, so I'm a better person than you. We base our lives on this economic model and this social hierarchical model, and it's all fiction. It's there completely and utterly to divide us. And the people that are controlling us, this is a handful of people. The only reason they control us is because they work together as one united thing where they keep society divided. There's the key. There's the solution right there. And like I've said, 3% of the world are born psychopaths, but 8% of the world are born where they can't be programmed. They're awake. We don't need everybody to change the world. We only need that 8% to stand up and make a difference because we can do it. All we have to do is make a difference in a public enough way, speak out eloquently. You know, we can make a difference. We can do it. We don't need everybody to stand with us. We just need the people who are awake to approach things in the right way, and we can change the world. And I think we can do it this year. So let's get on board and do it. Let's make a difference.
2014 is the year for us. I think this is the year we've been waiting for. I don't know why. I can't put my finger on it, but there's something deep inside me that is telling me 2014 is definitely the year of change. And there's that quote always pops out in my head when I'm having these sort of conversations. Never underestimate the power of a small group of people to change the world. In fact, it's the only thing that ever has.
Exactly. So this is what the Full Circle Project's all about, Kev. This is what I want to do is create a platform to bring all of these people, all this stuff in. It's just, that's all it is really. It's a platform that people can use to get this movement started because this movement is really a movement that is not a movement. It's simply an idea whose time has come. And that's what we have to do.
Max, is it on your website? How do we get info?
There is a link. There's a link. If you go to thecrowhouse.com, you'll see a link to the Full Circle Project. The Full Circle website is fullcirclenow.net. It's a very, very basic website at the moment. All I've got there is 3 pages and a place where people can contribute because we need to raise a fund. We've got to get enough funding so that we can fund local initiatives and workshops in every community around the planet if we can, and I want to start buying back threatened sections of Amazon jungle. We've got to save the jungle. We've got to save this place. And I think that if we could start a movement whereby we can buy like 1,000 acres to start with or something like that of Amazon that's under threat. We can say, look what we just did. Look what we did. We saved the Amazon ourselves. The companies aren't doing it. The governments aren't doing it. So we, the people, will buy it and put it in trust for ourselves. We can do this. We can make a start there. We can say, look what we just did, and it will inspire people to get on board and to make a difference. So that's what the Full Circle Project's all about. It's still in its infancy. There's a forum there you can go and sign up to and just look, okay, I'm in this area. Who else is in this area? Let's network. Let's get local groups in all of our communities together. And let's start getting to know each other and creating discussion groups, because I want to launch this project officially, hopefully within the next 3 or 4 months, and see where we can take it. Create a platform that everybody can use as a communication area, and where we can start workshops and start shifting the paradigm in every community around this planet. And I don't have all the ideas. I need ideas and input from everybody, because every community has got something that will unite it. Every community has got something in common. And you know what that is. It's your community. I don't live there. I don't know what it is. I don't know what might unite the people. Might be something, anything, you know, like a car boot swap. I mean, a garden cooperative. Might be a sewing group. I don't know. Whatever it is that's going to break down these barriers and get you talking to your neighbours. We've got to start talking to the people in our
community. We've started on a Monday now, a whole permaculture garden about, you know, all this as well. And I know Kevin and me were actually chatting last night on our own, you know, about actually trying to, you know, buy some land here and start.
Well, yeah, it's crucial that communities, it's crucial that we have the power of community. It's crucial that we have some unity in our community so that we've got the strength to simply stand up and ask for some accountability. Because you can't do it on your own. You'll get chewed up and spat out. The media will vilify you, all this sort of stuff. But if you've got a whole city stand up and do it, a whole town, well, you're going to start creating ripples and start creating waves that way. That's what we have to do. It's got to start at the ground, and it's got to be from the empowerment of the individual, because that's where the solution lies. You know, I can't save you. Only you can save you. But if you don't know who you are, well, you haven't got a hope in hell.
Yeah. Well, this talk has been very, very inspiring. And, you know, a lot of it is stuff we kind of knew bits of and felt, but you just the energy, and you've been doing this for so long, and it's so kind of, it flows through you, and it certainly sets me on fire, you know. I don't know about anyone else listening here. And
no, I have to say, it's been very inspiring listening to you tonight.
Get it, you know, done, you know, so definitely.
Yeah, well, I think we will. This is the year. We'll do it, darling. This is the year. We're going to make a difference. Okay. I got on the side on the homepage, I said, this year the gloves come off. And it's true, they do.
We need to keep the momentum going.
Sorry?
Absolutely.
We need to keep the momentum going, you know, while it's here.
Oh, absolutely. No,
it's not even a momentum. I think it's kind of a beautiful bomb waiting to explode in beautiful slow motion, you know. It's not even a destructive bomb, but a sort of a rainbow bomb just about to burst.
I like to think of it as a wave, and all we have to do is sit back and ride it.
Mm. Yeah, that's a beautiful way of saying it.
Yeah, surf the crest of the wave, yeah.
You got to get out there and paddle, though, brother. You got to be participating, you know.
You want to catch the wave, not get drowned by it.
And anyone who's surfed knows that, you know, sometimes paddling out there is the hardest bit when the current's coming at you to get that bloody wave.
That's exactly right, yeah.
But listen, we're kind of running out of time, but it's probably time to wrap up. But this has really been an amazing show, and we're all on fire here. And Max, really, really thank you so much for coming, and we'd love to have you back again soon. And we're going to all go and look on your website now and look at this project, and I'm sure we'll be doing what we can here on our side to contribute to that, and definitely that, you know, everyone getting together, even €5 from a couple of thousand people around the planet could buy a huge stretch of rainforest back, never mind what we can do in our own communities, you know. So
yeah, well, that'd be great. We need to do that, because there's a lot of it that's endangered. And but we also need to be able to fund projects. You know, you've got to be able to have workshops and stuff there, and you know, you can't obviously afford that. So we need to be able to create an umbrella organization that can fund these initiatives everywhere for people. You know, it's about putting it back to the community. It's all been done through a not-for-profit foundation.
Yeah, I've a lovely friend in Kevin in Australia.
But fullcirclenow.net, it's a very, very basic website at the moment. I'm actually looking for a webmaster to come and actually build a really nice website, because it needs a good site. It's very, very basic. I've kind of thrown it together myself, and so I apologize for that. But there is a forum that you can go sign up to and hopefully start networking in your community. And it's, like I said, it's in its infancy. It's just the preliminary stages. I hope to launch the project around about March or April, I hope. But I'm incredibly busy from between now and then, so we'll just see how I go with it.
Yeah, well, I was just saying that before that, I have another friend that lives in Australia, but he was just saying himself that, you know, when all this starts coming into be, that he wants to go to kind of Africa and start, you know, funneling money into just sports projects for you know, young kids in regions that, you know, that, but, you know, so people are looking outside the not just changing the reality that's right in front of us, which we have to do, and changing the whole matrix, but then, you know, not just, you know, sitting with your little vegetable patch and, you know, you're growing your own trees and vegetables and you have your goats, whatever, but then start getting out and going, yeah, now what can I do? Where can I go and help? You know, where can I help other communities? You know, so it's this project of yours sounds brilliant. So I'm probably waffling off now. So I better.
It's very exciting times.
It is. I think this is the year that we're going to make a difference. I really do. But people have to participate. I mean, it's going to take people getting on board. And so that's what I really hope to see.
Well, hopefully we can work together throughout the year as well, Max.
Oh, for sure. Happy to come on any time, guys.
Okay. Well, listen, I'm just now buzzing. I was a bit sort of sleepy earlier on and I'm on fire now. So we're going to wrap it up. And I'm once again thanking you very much, Max. And thank you, Paul. Thank you, Kevin. And
thanks very much yourself.
We'll be in touch, Max. Thank
you
so
much. Not a problem.
Much.
Pleasure to be on. Thank you very much for asking me.
All right, and have a lovely day. Sorry to get you up so early.
That's all right. It's good for me.
Bye, Max.
See you, Max.